Lenny McAllister in studio every Monday, although the next couple of Mondays may be a question. Our resident political analyst, good to see you again.
Good to see you as well. Larry, I'm going to pay you, so anytime I walk into a room, I want you to say my name. You say it so elegantly that it just amazes me. I'm like, man, I wish I said my own name like that.
Please rise and honor America and welcome six-time Grammy Award-winning recording artist, Lenny McAllister.
See, there you go. I have the best spot on 8 o'clock in the morning on a Monday.
Oh, wow. So there's a lot to unravel, but I got to ask you first about these drones. A lot of conspiracy theories now that there is some force behind them, yet we're being told not to worry.
I've been building the case for this, and I've been saying it on my show. I've been saying it when I've been filling in. You have to look at it in the context of all the different things that have gone on. You can't forget about the spy balloons over Montana and the Dakotas. You can't forget about all the cyber hacks of private business as well as government agencies. And you can't forget about now the drones. If you take that in totality and the fact that the United States of America is most vulnerable when presidential administrations change over, and foreign entities know that. There's a reason why North Korea usually has a few missile launches in January every 4 to 8 years. There's a reason why there's saber rattling in the Middle East every time there's a presidential changeover. If you take all those things into totality over the last 18 to 24 months, this is highly concerning. Even if the federal government knows who it is, this shows a vulnerability that we have that has to be shored up, because it's not just one thing or another. I mean, you can't forget about the incidences at some of our infrastructure sites as well over the last 24 months. This is concerning, even if it ends up being, you know, Matthew Broderick playing War Games from 1984.
Is it that old, that movie?
Yeah.
40 years old?
Probably a little older than that. Probably like 42.
Which was one of the first movies that kind of walked us through computers making mistakes and causing widespread panic, in this case, the threat of nuclear launches. That was in the movie.
Well, we actually had that in the 1980s as well. We had a couple of incidences between the Americans and the Soviets where shadows on radars almost caused nuclear war, which is what led eventually Gorbachev and Reagan to say, okay, we're too close to the precipice on this. We need to dial this back.
Really? Is that
yes.
Why that process began?
Well, including Able Archer was an exercise that was a military exercise in 83 that the Soviets took as a preemptive strike on the United States. And it took just a couple of people in the Soviet regime, lower level, to kind of say, no, this is not an actual attack. This is an exercise. And it caused the Russians to stand down, or else we would have had a lot more trouble. And that was in 83, October, November of 83.
So you think perhaps these drones are related to something? What, doing what?
Surveillance.
Just monitoring. But what would they be monitoring from that elevation at night?
Vulnerabilities. I mean, if it's a foreign entity, it's going to be vulnerabilities. How do you attack the United States? I mean, if you're going to weaken the United States from an infrastructure standpoint, you're not going to go after the water supply in New York City. You're not going to go after, you know, the urban centers in California. You're going to look for second level and third level urban areas that will cause enough of a panic that the country has to respond, but there's going to be a greater vulnerability than other places. Again, you're not going to attack a Philadelphia, but you would look at a Pittsburgh. You think about the military base in Ohio by Dayton that was surveilled just over the last 24 hours that we're hearing the reports about. You're going to look more at that than maybe you do Camp Lejeune down in North Carolina, which is well known and is seen as being a more strategic site in many ways. So if you're a foreign entity and you have the Trump administration coming in with a lot of controversies during the holiday season with an 82-year-old president on his way out and possibly the Biden on the way out and the Trump on the way in not necessarily communicating well, this is a good time to up the ante a little bit, even if it is nothing more than surveillance.
How does our government let this to continue? You mean to tell me there's no way they can snatch one of these and analyze it or tell us, or are they just not talking to us?
I think number one, they're probably not telling us everything. And number two, it's very easy for us living in the United States, we're usually isolated from the rest of the world, to forget about the whole geopolitical chessboard that's out there. Let's go back to the 1962 missile crisis in Cuba. Part of what was going on in that dynamic that most Americans did not know about when it was tamped down was the fact that the Russians wanted missiles out of Turkey. And we forget that there are things that we may be doing as well. What happens if we've been surveilling, you know, northern Russia because of new military bases that we're unaware of or new technologies that they have, and the Russians are doing that on our land? Or let's say maybe it's the Iranians, and we've been doing certain things in the Middle East to kind of get an upper hand and using new technologies, and this is part of the interplay of diplomacy between superpowers. Maybe it's between the United States and the Chinese, for example. We don't know, which is what makes what the White House and their statements, that's what makes it so perplexing, is they're kind of hinting to us, we kind of have an idea of what this is, but they also can't admit to us, okay, and by the way, we broke a treaty of our own by spying on this, and that's the reason why we're going through that. That could be in play as well. I'm not saying it is, but that would not be a shock.
Lenny McAllister, we'll see. I mean, this story has captivated the nation's curiosity at very least, and then created some hysteria for people who live nearby.
In multiple states now. It just started out as a New Jersey story. Not anymore.
Our conversation with Lenny McAllister, our resident political analyst, who also wears many hats. One is dad. And the kids are looking forward to getting out of school for the holidays. What, this week? The end of this week?
End of this week. And I got a chance, and I got to say it because it was the first time I said it yesterday on my show yesterday, 2 to 5, here on KDK. I get to celebrate this holiday season for the first time as granddad. My daughter, it was her birthday yesterday, and I got a chance to celebrate her for the first time ever as a wife, a resident of another state, and an expectant mother. And it's a really, to go through each phase of life with your child. And now, I mean, she's my oldest. So to be able to experience that and just reflect upon it is pretty cool, because I still see little girls that are 3 years old. And I remember, you know, riding Alicia on my shoulders and taking her to mass at midday when I used to work at nights and everything else. And then now she's going to have her own. It's a pretty cool feeling to go through this holiday season with her expecting.
And when is she due?
She is due the beginning of March.
I'm going to say something, and I told Rich Fitzgerald this before he had his first, and now he has eight children, so
yes.
Now they're starting to come, and they will in droves. But it's the one thing at this stage in life that is actually better than you think it'll be. So as much as you're looking forward to it now, it's even better.
That's cool.
So good for you.
Thank you,
and
sir.
Your family.
Thank you, sir.
All right, what are the Big Two doing? Current President Joe Biden is going to join Acting Secretary of Labor Julie Hsu at an event at the Department of Labor to honor our nation's labor history. And then later we'll host a Hanukkah holiday reception tonight at the White House. And then Donald Trump is scheduled to deliver remarks to the press on American investment with the CEO of SoftBank. I want to ask you about this situation with Nippon Steel and U.S. Steel. And we did touch on it last week, but what I didn't know when I saw you last week, that we, Aaron, our producer, and I have been reaching out to speak to the vice chairman, who has been, you know, making himself periodically available, Takahiro Mori, who came to Pittsburgh last week and requested that he'd like to meet with me.
I remember. I heard about this.
So, I said, yes, I'm interested in what he has to say, and sat down with him last Thursday, had a good conversation about what are you being told are the concerns of this country in doing this deal. Remember, they're vetting this for security reasons first.
Yes.
And I said, if this was China, I would understand that because we have adversarial positions with China, but you're one of our greatest allies in the country of Japan. So what is their concern? And I think politics play a very big part in this because nobody wants to seem like we're giving up an American iconic company like U.S. Steel to a foreign nation, friend or certainly not foe. But now that the election's over, isn't there a way to maybe save face and make a change where they could make everybody kind of create a win-win situation? They want to keep the headquarters in Pittsburgh. They've committed $1.2 billion. That's real money to retrofit the Mon Valley Works, expand the job opportunities here. And why would they be against it?
It's more than politics. I mean, it is politics, but it's also, and you mentioned this, Larry, it's optics. Because politics with understanding can change the optics. Politics without good political maneuvering, good diplomacy, and sound leadership only leaves you with the optics, which, quite frankly, is different than what it is. And what it is it's a private company that's held by stakeholders that is attempting to go through a transitional period with another private company that just so happens to be based overseas. We have these going on all the time. And you can still meet national and international interests with two private companies working together with interactions with their respective governments. No one's explaining it that way. Instead, they're only hearing U.S. of U.S. Steel as if it's an American-owned company owned by the federal government. And it's ironic because if you remember, Biden, Harris, and Trump all against the deal.
Correct.
Throughout 2024 based off of political optics without sitting here and saying, okay, these folks need these jobs and we need to start having steel made in America with American interest to strengthen our resolve around the world. And by the way, if we're going to push back on China, you need allies such as Japan to push back on China. People forget just over the last several years, we were complaining about Chinese steel that was junk steel in many regards being dumped into the international market and bringing down the price of steel and impacting American workers. This is one way to push back against that with innovation, with other types of investments that make sense. People are forgetting about the long-term play when they're going off of the emotions and the optics of what they think it is.
What I told Mr. Mori was it appears a takeover has a very negative connotation as opposed to a merger. Just the simple word exchange.
You're correct.
We want to partner with you as opposed to be a takeover scenario.
We want to invest in you for you to be stronger and to revitalize American Steel versus looking at it as we're going to take over an American icon.
And it seems like the rank and file is building momentum to say, hey, I told him personally as an individual, I have no stake in this. I don't own stock in U.S. Steel. I'm not worried about Japan as a security risk. I only care about our community. And what I'm hearing is if this investment is made here and they promise to keep the headquarters here, that's a win for the region and for the men and women who have these jobs. So that's why I'm just curious. Maybe there's a way when Donald Trump gets into office, they've kicked it down the road past the election on purpose, thanks to, in part, our governor, Shapiro.
Yeah.
So now it'll be interesting to see what happens from here.
You know, well, we also have to look at how Donald Trump is not backtracking on tariffs. So if he's not going to backtrack on tariffs, is he going to backtrack on this? He still likes playing to the crowd, even if it doesn't make the most political or common sense.
So if Joe Biden comes out against the deal, maybe.
But all three of them have done this over 20. It was the one position that they all were lockstep in, which was kind of odd.
It was. But if Joe Biden comes out, and their anticipation is that he will come out against the deal officially, then maybe Donald Trump will want to do the opposite some way if they can rearrange the deal enough to make the optics fit.
This vice chair should try to find a way, and Nippon Steel should try to find a way to position Trump to be the hero without him doing too much. That's how you get it done.
Takahiro Mori, and we will be speaking with him one-on-one in the very near future. This is the Big K Morning Show, working our way through this Monday morning. Larry Richard with Lenny McAllister this hour, and every Monday, exceptions being next week, you and I both have little holiday time.
Yes,
looking forward to that. Meanwhile, just a footnote to our conversation about Nippon Steel and U.S. Steel. Ironically, the same day I met Hirohito, or Takahiro, wait a minute, I'm going to make sure I get that right, Mori, the vice chairman of Nippon Steel, met him in person in town Thursday. That morning, Elon Musk had reposted a Donald Trump tweet. This is verified. Any person or company investing $1 billion or more in the United States of America will receive fully expedited approvals and permits, including but in no way limited to all environmental approvals. Then in all caps, get ready to rock. And read that to the vice chairman. And of course, they had just seen it too. And I asked him, so why is this an issue with Nippon Steel?
Well,
and he didn't have a good answer.
He didn't have a good answer because he doesn't know. And part of it is, again, looking at things in totality, Larry, Donald Trump was not really that focused on Asia during his 4 years in the White House. He focused on North Korea with the fire and fury, and then it kind of backed off from there. He focused on China when it came to COVID-19 and the tariff war. But if you remember, even with the tariff war that happened in 2019, particularly ramping up in 2019, we talked a lot about our allies in Canada and in Europe, and we talked about China. We didn't talk about leveraging Japan in the fight against pushing back against China. Again, I've brought this up previously. The Trans-Pacific Partnership was something that Trump was against, that Obama was for in 2016, that would have used Japan and Australia and Canada, because they're a Pacific Ocean country as well, and pushed back against China. He has not really fostered that relationship. If that were there from the first administration, maybe his position on this deal might be different. Now, this could be a good pivot point for him. And again, like I mentioned before the break, if they're able to position him as a power broker that brings the deal home, that would look good for him from a political optic standpoint, and it gets the deal done. But he didn't position himself as someone that would work with Japan over 2017 to 2021. So it's not a shock that he's not positioned to help get it across the finish line or understands the greater picture versus just the political optics right now.
The concern is for the region. Their own company, remember, passed on building out infrastructure in the Mon Valley and moved it south. They're promising to keep it here and put $1.2 billion into that structure, and they're not going to do that. And then, you know, where are they going to go? So if not Nippon, then who is going to save the people in our area who I'm most concerned with in the Mon Valley and everybody that's associated with U.S. Steel?
And this might be one of the last best chances. And again, you know, the political rhetoric versus the realities are, as you well know, Larry, they have chasms more often than not. Donald Trump campaigned in 2016 on bringing back the coal industry. You know, he campaigned on a lot of different things that took industry back 50 years that just technological advances are not going to allow us to do. You have to take advantage of these type of opportunities that will allow you to have best of both worlds. It will allow those small towns that have a lot of people working at those local steel mills to be able to have viable jobs, to not just barely survive, but to actually start thriving again. And people forget there's a downstream effect. If they're buying homes, they're paying mortgages. Property tax revenue goes up. The local school districts can be revitalized. Duquesne hasn't had a lot in their school district for quite some time. You look at other school districts where the high schools and the middle schools are either failing because they don't have the resources or they're not providing resources at all. This is an opportunity for some of those communities to be able to come back. You do that, you can start doing everything from tamping down violence and crime to bringing back businesses, and you can start having more livable communities. This is a way of doing it. That's why you see that commercial from all those mayors saying, you know, let's get this deal done.
Right. This is the local elected officials who these people work in their communities. They want to keep working, some cases for generations. And I'm just saying, I want to know why they would, what's the real reason they would be against it? If we can get this done and keep U.S. Steel's iconic headquarters here.
And what's interesting about it, too, if you look at those communities, Larry, they are both traditionally Democrats as far as their political registrations, but they're also the type of Democrat that went Obama, Trump, Biden, Trump. So you're like, okay, these are not people that are ideologically just fixated on whatever the top of the party says, like a Joe Biden in this instance. These are people that are looking at it from both sides, and they're saying, we need this. You would think there would be some sway. Now, the ironic thing is, this is almost epitomizing why the Democrats lost in November. They don't have a connection with that type of voter anymore, and the opposition to this type of deal so fervently from Biden and previously Harris kind of epitomizes why that schism politically exists within the Democratic base.
If not this deal, then who? And all those jobs go away from here. They'll pull them south or whatever. But if we can save this, I want to do everything we can to try.
We have to. And there is value and honor in blue-collar work.
Yes.
And we have to put our money and our actions where our mouth is when we say that. It can't just be something we say on Labor Day. It has to be something we live every day.
Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard with Lenny McAllister getting ready to roll. And boy, this hour just flew by.
It flies past every week. It's fun. I enjoy it, but it's always fast.
Last week that our federal elected officials are on the job, and then they're off. And then we've got this big transition coming, of course, on January 20th. In between here and there, what are the most important things that are likely to happen?
We have a continuing resolution coming out of Congress in order to fund our government that has to be done by Friday. So,
oh, yeah, there's that.
There's that.
But they, you know what, Lenny, they've kicked this down the can for so many years. And you know what? I hear it and I'm like, they're not going to let that happen. This isn't even a story anymore, but you're right.
And they've allowed government shutdowns to happen. So they will bicker. They'll continue to get their paychecks. A lot of people in Congress are millionaires anyway. Think about all the federal employees that if this doesn't happen by Friday, we'll be looking at a shortage during the holiday season.
Well, what about this? What if those elected officials also do not get paid if they don't?
A lot of them are independently wealthy.
So
the average worth of the average congressman, I think, is $2 million.
Really?
Yes. So you'll find money somewhere if you're worth $2 million. The other challenge of this is, and to your point, they usually get it done anyway. Let's say they get it done. It's what will be put into the continuing resolution that you have to pay attention to. We're already talking about a tariff war. American farmers are already talking about needing help. And the farm bill from 2018 expired, which includes a lot of subsidies. You already got the Elon Musk, Vivek Ramaswamy movement being pushed to cut certain subsidies, including the farmers. What happens on Friday or before when it comes to those subsidies? Because if you take them out of the bill now, They're going to hurt now, and then there may be more cutbacks. If you boost it up in the bill, do they become a target? Does it help farmers, and then it's a target to be cut starting January 20th? These are the under-the-current stories that will play out with this CR that's going to be voted on this week.
Lenny McAllister, always good to see you. Thanks for your time. And if I don't see you, have a great holiday. Merry Christmas, New Year. I'll catch you, I guess, right after the first of the year.
You shall. Merry Christmas and happy holidays to you and yours, kind sir. God bless.
I think it's really creeped up on us.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, Christmas is a week from Wednesday. Come on, man. Somebody said, hey, there, you got all your Christmas? No, absolutely not. Hit the dollar store Christmas Eve.
Except for Mrs. Richard. That one has already been taken care of in spades.
Mm.